This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 17th of November, 2021, and we almost have a euro crisis on our hands. Fresh big rises in the natural gas price yesterday, increasing worries about a very dark winter to come for Europe. We'll get to that in a moment. It's a very different picture than what it looked like, certainly during the sovereign EU crisis, and we'll try to piece through how bad the situation is and where we can see signs of the market running for cover. But for now, of course, equity markets can't be bothered. In fact, they've been quite strong in Europe and yesterday as well in the US, where we've seen the S&P almost hitting that all-time high above 4,700. That seems to be the sort of local resistance area now that we've sort of blasted through the 61.8% retracement level I was talking about earlier. NASDAQ 100, a little bit divergent, not quite as high, but getting close anyway to those all-time highs as well. I think the longer U.S. yields are the key there, and it won't just be the nominal yields, that it would be very important to track these real yields as well, because you can argue that yields are arguably falling in a world, if real yields, are falling and continue to fall, that could be stock market positive, even if nominal yields make new highs for the cycle. So very important to track the yield and real yield situation here as an equity investor. If we look at the Saxo equity theme baskets, so our baskets of different themes in the market and the baskets of stocks that track those themes, you can see on the overview on slide 2 in today's slide deck, you can find the link in today's podcast description, as you can with every episode. Quite interesting to see these bubble stocks doing very well, up 1.5% on the day. Mega caps as well having a strong day. We had strong earnings reports from at least on the sales side from Walmart and Home Depot, very different reactions. I can break that down a little bit later. And then on the negative side, we've seen Bitcoin dipping over the last couple of days. So that's behind the crypto correction, although you can see month to date, we're up quite strong there. And just a note on the bubble stocks, I don't think it's in the bubble stock basket because it's such a new equity, but Rivian, the new EV maker supported by Amazon and Ford, or backed by Amazon and Ford, they have not yet sold a vehicle, but yesterday they were up 15% and the market cap there worth more than Volkswagen. I think any way you slice it, that's something remarkable in terms of speculative fervor. But we need to get to this natural gas situation in Europe, because this is really critical stuff. We're seeing, we've seen sort of that the big spike, and we've come down from it, and then it was concerned because we weren't continuing to come down lower. Now we have a big news item that's breaking here yesterday that's got the price back up, and it really is a concern for Europe. So take us through what's going on with natural gas again, Ole.
Absolutely. And just before I do that, John, I'll before we leave slide 2, I just want to highlight the one market which was down yesterday, which is potentially also impacting some of these commodities. Travel was down 1.6% yesterday, and it is renewed COVID fears that's driving this, that we once again stepping off the planes, not traveling anywhere, and at least in the short term, with the spreading we're seeing right now, especially here in Europe, I'll say around the world. So that's having impact potentially also on oil markets, where demand could suffer a setback. But the story in commodities is really one about the gas market we're seeing right now. And yesterday, the German regulators, they put on hold the permission for the line, the Nord Stream 2 line, to open. They basically want all the assets that's related or located in Germany to be put into a German registered company. And until that happens, they will not give the allowance for flows to start. And Gasmar reacted very forcefully. We are trading back up to 100 euros a megawatt hour this morning. That's in US dollar terms, Natgas Henry Hub terms, that is around $33. And at the same time, actually, yes, the gas price in US slowed a bit down to around $5 on the assumption that the winter has not really kicked off, and also that some of the industrial demand is showing a bit of a reaction to these high prices, even though they're much lower in US than they are in Europe. But returning to Europe, high gas prices for the foreseeable future, no Nord Stream supplies in any forthcoming, but perhaps potentially not until next year. That leaves us really struggling with supplies. And you can see Gazprom storage facilities in Europe, they have started to fill up, but obviously you can see we are nowhere near comfortable levels at this point in time. So with that in mind, gas electricity prices are surging once again. We got carbon emission prices surging as well, hitting new record highs, because this could lead to more coal being burned. And as you burn more coal, you have to buy more emissions. And this is just the wheel that keeps turning. And with this in mind, we already know that the damage that's being done to industry in Europe and to potential to local consumers, and this will only just add to the pain, especially if the markets start to worry that this is not going to be over anytime soon.
Yeah, and on that note, if we look at what the euro is doing, so we looked a lot about, you know, we look at euro dollar as both the euro and the dollar, but really is the euro doing the heavy lifting here in terms of the moves in the market, and it is falling rapidly. We do have a firm dollar, but it is really the weak euro that is in focus here. Look on slide 3, that euro dollar slide of the last 2 weeks, and you know this week's bar, we're only in Wednesday morning here, already down, touching well below 113 overnight. It's bouncing a bit this morning. And effectively, that's taken out the 61.8% retracement of that entire rally sequence from the 2020 lows. And I think part of what is at play here is, I mean, we have a heck of a lot of uncertainty here around that natural gas price, you know, crimping and power crunch, effectively crimping the EU economy, leaving the ECB with nowhere to go in terms of signaling any rate normalization when the economy is under pressure from this input cost rise. Where do you go for safety? It's not about a peripheral play. There is an existential risk around all this in the longer run, especially if the German government or coalition that forms includes the LDP's Lindner as the finance minister. I think that sends us straight on a path to a new EU existential crisis. But again, with the ECB in there keeping spreads normalized, it's hard to discover where the weak points are. And then I think the weak point itself becomes the euro itself. And I think that's one of the reasons it's trading so intensively around all of these issues with such high volatility to all of this. So we need to see this whole Belarus-Poland border issue. And we need to see the natural gas pipeline opened and flowing, the Nord Stream 2, and this issue to normalize and rapidly. And that would still not address the whole fiscal forward recovery package, fiscal stimulus that is likely needed to get the euro moving forward. Especially on some of the climate targets, et cetera. So Europe is in a bad place until proven otherwise.
And John, if I just may add to that, then I think you can see also elsewhere that this is a euro weakness, not so much the dollar strength story, because if you look at gold, gold has actually been holding up reasonably well this past week, even though we've seen this euro strength. We actually did pop temporarily briefly higher yesterday before coming down, as we saw some stronger numbers from the economic data from the US. But it basically means that the gold priced in euros is actually one of the best performing gold crosses right now. It's trading close to a 1 year. Just really highlight that the market is looking at this as much as a euro issue than a dollar strength issue.
Yeah, and highlighting that point, and actually pushing back against my own point to some degree. If we look at, you know, traditionally if the European growth outlook is threatened, you'll see the peripheral currencies doing poorly. So those that are dependent and very pro-cyclical to and high beta to the outlook for Europe. So I'm thinking here of especially the Swedish krona, but also some of the Central and Eastern European countries and currencies like the Polish zloty, Hungarian forints. And that is, you know, how the market is trading that right now. But if we look back to the EU debt crisis back from late 2009 into basically Draghi's whatever it takes speech in July of 2012, we saw a very different dynamic, and that was the Swedish krona serving, for example, and other the Norwegian krona as well, serving as safe haven currencies from that peripheral debt. We're not seeing that. In fact, we're seeing the normal behavior in the Swedish krona, which is it's weakened because of their concerns for the outlook. So on slide 4, I put up the whole chart of the FX trends. You can see the euro dragging lower, the Swedish krona even weaker still. And I put in a dollar Swedish chart. And my question mark here would be, if we are heading towards a proper EU existential situation, I think the whole euro stocky squeeze, so the euro Swedish krona squeeze back higher, looks a little bit unfair to me. So that'd be one of the first places to fade or trade independent of euro dollar, the whole dollar aspect of this, and say, okay, is this something that's creeping into the existential picture here for Europe, rather than just isolated to the European growth, but more actually things about concern for the EU itself. Until then, it's just about growth now. If we start to see something like euro stocky coming in lower despite the weaker euro, that would be an interesting signal or a next step in all of this. Maybe a little bit too much on all of that, but I think it's a very interesting, it's certainly the most interesting thing going on in currency markets besides the very strong Chinese currency, as they're looking to keep prices stable in China relative and keeping a firm Chinese renminbi is clearly their policy there. Okay, we have plenty of else going on in the commodity space. Prices not going down, except for if you're an iron ore trader, as we have, for example, coffee looks like it's getting up to some pretty heady levels here. What's going on in the coffee market?
Yeah, we hit some pretty tasty levels here, $2.20 a pound, which is the same level we had back in the when we peaked back in 2014. I put in here on slide 6 a few of the reasons. We've known for a long time that it's been a horrible year in Brazil with frost and drought cutting production, not only of the last year's production or this year's production, but also next year, which is the big online season. Brazil coffee production alternate between low and high production season. So that's creating some concerns. We all know about the congestions in the global shipping industry, high container rates, which is also having an impact, surging fertilizer prices, which will probably get even worse now with the gas price we're seeing recently. Too much rain in Colombia, and just add to that the threat of civil war in Ethiopia, which is the world's third biggest grower. So this is just basically almost a perfect storm for coffee, and the risk is clearly that if we do take out that two and a quarter level, then the market will be looking at that peak from 2011 at $3. We're keeping a close eye on certified warehouse stocks at the ICE exchange, which is the which controls the Arabica coffee futures contract. As you can see, we're seeing quite a reduction there. And we've been a lot lower previously, but there's also some seasonality there. So we're keeping an eye on that. But generally, a market that is well supported. And again, commodity prices rising right now, where the dollar is actually strengthening, that is obviously showing an additional layer of strength.
Yeah, and scary for purchasing power for those non-dollar currencies, obviously, as well, especially in emerging markets where we're seeing spots of pain, too. Now, let's look at oil prices. They're kind of dead in the water here. Is part of this the COVID overlay of COVID concerns, or what's moving and shaking oil these days?
I think COVID right now is taking a bit of a backseat focus, but we all know how it suddenly can return to the front and become the headlines. And then if it does, then that potentially could have add some additional weakness. But right now it is the prospect or the risk that China or U.S. and maybe even China could add supplies just to try to squeeze or force prices lower. So that's one outlook. But also we now had the monthly outlooks from IEA and EIA over the last week. IEA was the last one yesterday, and basically they're looking for a more balanced outlook as we enter 2022. So all the worries about the very tight supplies throughout next year, they're putting some question marks to that. So again, just like many other markets right now, we have really many markets in the commodity space now where we have banks got hold completely opposing views of where we go next year. That goes for something like copper, that goes for the oil, it goes for gold as well. And it just highlights how we're most likely going to enter another year of increased volatility. Just briefly, this afternoon, we got the weekly stock report from the US. We will be keeping an eye on, as per usual, crude oil and gasoline stocks. Gasoline, if you're a US motorist, because you're paying record prices in some places. And if that continues to tank, then obviously that will add some pressure. And also whether production is picking up, and also whether they are taking further crude stocks out of strategic reserves on a drip for drip basis.
Yeah, if there's one way to get U.S. consumers angry, it is via record gasoline prices. So I'm really curious when I see that chart there on slide 7 of the gasoline inventories in the U.S. to see what's going on. And in fact, yesterday we saw the retail sales report for October from the U.S. Very strong numbers, 1.7% on the headline, a bit lower on the ex auto and gas number, slight down revision on that as well. A few moving parts. So of course, prices are higher. That's driving some of the gains. But some of the anecdotal stuff, there was one article I was reading on NPR. I might retweet that now as we're speaking. You can, by the way, you can follow us on Twitter, at Saxo Market Call. just the widespread disgust at prices rising to the degree they are. You know, chicken prices, meat prices, other basic foodstuffs, much higher than they have been before. And then there's the narrative and perhaps the behavior change, as everyone is quite aware now of these supply chain snarls and the risk that whatever they're shopping for into the holiday season may not be there if they don't go out and buy it now. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's some bit of cannibalization as well on seasonality relative to the normal pattern. We won't know that, of course, until we get the November, December numbers, but just something to keep in mind, this interesting combination of hot numbers and widespread dissatisfaction among consumers. And as well, another NAHB housing market index. This is sort of the measure, one of the better forward measures of the heat in the U.S. housing market. There may be some scrambling and concerns about rising prices there. People hate the prices they're paying, but they're running around trying to find a place to live and bidding up prices anyway, as we saw this number back up to a new local high here at 83. So interesting numbers continue to come out of the U.S. And then on the earnings front, briefly, we don't have Peter with us today. Hopefully he'll be back on the podcast tomorrow. We had Walmart and Home Depot earnings. Walmart got really crushed in terms of the market reaction to its earnings report, even though it was nominally strong on the headline numbers, because of signs of margin pressure and dealing with a very high input cost from these supply chain difficulties. Whereas the narrative around the Home Depot release was that it was able to pass its costs on better to consumers, and the Home Depot price jumping another 5%+ to new record highs. On today's earnings, very interesting company. We have more, by the way, U.S. retail stuff with the Lowe's and Target reporting. But NVIDIA, the superstar performer of the last few years, a $750 billion company now selling at or trading at 34+ times sales, if you can put that into your cup and drink it. And we have revenue growth, however, of course, that's part of what's driving the enthusiasm around the stock, of 68% last quarter year on year, 83% the quarter before that. So huge gains. Some of the recent big pump in the stock is around the idea that there's going to be this metaverse created by Meta and others, require a massive 3D graphics processing. And of course, NVIDIA provides all the best chips for graphics processors. So I guess that's the story around that stock. But just remarkable performance. It's interesting to see how they do their guidance relative to the performance of the equity and then how the market treats that guidance as well. By the way, the list of earnings, if I didn't mention it, was on slide 8. And then on the macro calendar, so a bit more going on today as well. As Ola mentioned, we have the latest weekly numbers on crude oil and products in the U.S. Next steps there for the oil market. We have a couple of other bits and pieces, a Canadian CPI data point today, quite interesting. There, we had a hotter than expected UK CPI headline number this morning. We're seeing euro sterling trading to new local lows there. And then the 20-year treasury auction is quite interesting because, again, if there's one thing that could unsettle this market, it would be a big breakout in the longer end of the US yield curve, especially one that takes real yields higher rather than keeping them stable. So watching it, and Althea has mentioned, our fixed income strategist has mentioned, that this 20-year is one of the less desirable maturities for the market in terms of demand. So it'll be interesting to watch that. Tons of Fed speakers, don't want to pay too much attention to that. And then overhanging everything, we're all waiting for this nomination news from U.S. President Biden. There's been some teasing articles indicating the decision has basically been made. A good friend of mine believes that it could be who Biden nominates could be a part of negotiations around the next fiscal package, the social spending package, et cetera. But looks like oddmakers are now starting to favor Brainard. I don't have that data. I've just seen it reported that there's tilting more towards Brainard now than towards Powell. Could be quite a market reaction, supposedly on the dollar negative side, because she's supposed to be more dovish. It seems this is a very open, everyone's discussing this. So I'm not sure how durable any reaction would be. There's also the unknown of how difficult the hearing and confirmation process would be for Brainard, whereas Powell is it's easier to get him through because Republicans would be in favor of a repeat there. So that's a lot the market's waiting for here. But that's it for today. And it's a wrap. We'll see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.